Whereupon the ambassador to Anacreon bought the latest edition of the Terminus City Journal, sauntered casually to City Hall Park, and sitting down on the first empty bench he came to, read the editorial page, sports section, and comic sheet while waiting. At the end of half an hour, he tucked the paper under his arm, entered City Hall, and presented himself in the anteroom. In doing all this, he remained safely and thoroughly unrecognized, for since he was so entirely obvious, no one gave him a second look. Hardin looked up at him and grinned. "Have a cigar. How was the trip?" Barisov helped himself. "Interesting. There was a priest in the next cabin on his way here to take a special course in the preparation of radioactive synthetics for the treatment of cancer, you know." "Surely he didn't call it radioactive synthetics now." "I guess not. It was the holy food to him." The mayor smiled. "Go on." "He inveigled me into a theological discussion and did his level best to elevate me out of sordid materialism." "And never recognized his own high priest?" "Without my crimson robe? Besides, he was a Smyrnian. It was an interesting experience, though. It is remarkable, Hardin, how the religion of science has grabbed hold. I've written an essay on the subject, entirely for my own amusement. It wouldn't do to have it published. Treating the problem sociologically, it would seem that when the old empire began to rot at the fringes, it could be considered that science, as science, had failed the outer worlds. To be reaccepted, it would have to present itself in another guise, and it has done just that. It works out beautifully when you use symbolic logic to help out." "Interesting." The mayor placed his arms behind his neck and said suddenly, "Start talking about the situation at Anacreon." The ambassador frowned and withdrew the cigar from his mouth. He looked at it distastefully and put it down. "Well, it's pretty bad. You wouldn't be here otherwise." "Scarcely. Here's the position. The key man at Anacreon is the Prince Regent, Venus. He's King Leopold's uncle."
"I know, but Leopold is coming of age next year, isn't he? I believe he'll be 16 in February."
"Yes." Pause, and then a wry addition. "If he lives. The king's father died under suspicious circumstances, a needle bullet through the chest during a hunt. It was called an accident."
"Humph. I seem to remember, Venus, the time I was on Anacreon when we kicked them off Terminus. It was before your time. Let's see now. If I remember, he was a dark young fellow, black hair and a squint in his right eye. He had a funny hook in his nose."
"Same fella. The hook and the squint are still there, but his hair's gray now. He plays the game dirty. Luckily, he's the most egregious fool on the planet. Fancies himself as a shrewd devil, too, which makes his folly the more transparent."
"That's usually the way.
His notion of cracking an egg is to shoot an atomic blast at it. Witness the tax on temple property he tried to impose just after the old king died 2 years ago. Remember?"
Hardin nodded thoughtfully, then smiled. "The priests raised a howl.
They raised one you could hear way out to Lucrezia. He's shown more caution in dealing with the priesthood since, but he still manages to do things the hard way. In a way, it's unfortunate for us. He has unlimited self-confidence."
"Probably an overcompensated inferiority complex. Younger sons of royalty get that way, you know."
"But it amounts to the same thing. He's foaming at the mouth with eagerness to attack the Foundation. He scarcely troubles to conceal it. And he's in a position to do it, too, from the standpoint of armament. The old king built up a magnificent navy, and Venus hasn't been sleeping the last 2 years. In fact, the tax on temple property was originally intended for further armament, and when that fell through, he increased the income tax twice."
"Any grumbling at that?"
"None of serious importance. Obedience to appointed authority was the text of every sermon in the kingdom for weeks. Not that Venus showed any gratitude."
"All right, I've got the background. Now what's happened?"
2 weeks ago, an Anacreonian merchant ship came across a derelict battlecruiser of the old Imperial Navy. It must have been drifting in space for at least 3 centuries.
Interest flickered in Hardin's eyes. He sat up. "Yes, I've heard of that. The Board of Navigation has sent me a petition asking me to obtain the ship for purposes of study. It is in good condition, I understand."
"In entirely too good condition," responded Barisov dryly. "When Venus received your suggestion last week that he turn the ship over to the Foundation, he almost had convulsions."
"He hasn't answered yet."
"He won't, except with guns, or so he thinks. You see, he came to me on the day I left Anacreon and requested that the Foundation put this battlecruiser into fighting order and turn it over to the Anacreonian Navy. He had the infernal gall to say that your note of last week indicated a plan of the Foundation's to attack Anacreon. He said that refusal to repair the battlecruiser would confirm his suspicions,
and indicated that measures for the self-defense of Anacreon would be forced upon him. Those are his words. Forced upon him. And that's why I'm here. Hardin laughed gently. Barasov smiled and continued, "Of course, he expects a refusal, and it would be a perfect excuse, in his eyes, for immediate attack." "I see that, Barasov. Well, we have at least 6 months to spare, so have the ship fixed up and present it with my compliments. Have it renamed the Venus as a mark of our esteem and affection." He laughed again. And again Barasov responded with the faintest trace of a smile. "I suppose it's the logical step, Hardin, but I'm worried." "What about?" "It's a ship. They could build in those days. Its cubic capacity is half again that of the entire Anacreonian Navy. It's got atomic blasts capable of blowing up a planet, and a shield that could take a Q-beam without working up radiation. Too much of a good thing, Hardin."
"Superficial, Barasov, superficial. You and I both know that the armament he now has could defeat Terminus handily, long before we could repair the cruiser for our own use."
"What does it matter, then, if we give him the cruiser as well? You know it won't ever come to actual war."
"I suppose so, yes." The ambassador looked up.
"But Hardin..." "Well, why do you stop? Go ahead."
"Look, this isn't my province, but I've been reading the paper." He placed the journal on the desk and indicated the front page.
"What's this all about?"
Hardin dropped a casual glance.
"A group of councilmen are forming a new political party."
"That's what it says." Barasov fidgeted. "I know you're in better touch with internal matters than I am, but they're attacking you with everything short of physical violence. How strong are they?"
"Damn strong. They'll probably control the council after next election."
"Not before." Barasov looked at the mayor obliquely. "There are ways of gaining control besides elections."
"Do you take me for Venus?"
"No, but repairing the ship will take months, and an attack after that is certain. Our yielding will be taken as a sign of appalling weakness, and the addition of the Imperial cruiser will just about double the strength of Venus' navy. He'll attack as sure as I'm a high priest. Why take chances? Do one of two things, either reveal the plan of campaign to the council, or force the issue with Anacreon now."
Hardin frowned. "Force the issue now, before the crisis comes? It's the one thing I mustn't do. There's Harry Seldon in the plan, you know."
Barasov hesitated, then muttered, "You're absolutely sure, then, that there is a plan?"
"There can scarcely be any doubt," came the stiff reply. "I was present at the opening of the time vault, and Seldon's recording revealed it then."
"I didn't mean that, Hardin. I just don't see how it could be possible to chart history for 1,000 years ahead. Maybe Seldon overestimated himself."
He shriveled a bit at Hardin's ironical smile and added,
"Well, I'm no psychologist."
"Exactly. None of us are. But I did receive some elementary training in my youth, enough to know what psychology is capable of, even if I can't exploit its capabilities myself. There's no doubt but that Seldon did exactly what he claims to have done. The Foundation, as he says, was established as a scientific refuge, the means by which the science and culture of the dying empire was to be preserved through the centuries of barbarism that have begun, to be rekindled in the end into a second empire."
Barasov nodded, a trifle doubtfully. "Everyone knows that's the way things are supposed to go. But can we afford to take chances? Can we risk the present for the sake of a nebulous future?"
"We must, because the future isn't nebulous. It's been calculated out by Seldon and charted. Each successive crisis in our history is mapped, and each depends in a measure on the successful conclusion of the ones previous. This is only the second crisis, and space knows what effect even a trifling deviation would have in the end."
"That's a rather empty speculation."
"No. Harry Seldon said in the Time Vault that at each crisis our freedom of action would become circumscribed to the point where only one course of action was possible."
"So as to keep us on the straight and narrow?"
"So as to keep us from deviating, yes. But conversely, as long as more than one course of action is possible, the crisis has not been reached. We must let things drift so long as we possibly can, and by space that's what I intend doing."
Barasov didn't answer. He chewed his lower lip in a grudging silence. It had only been the year before that Hardin had first discussed the problem with him, the real problem, the problem of countering Anacreon's hostile preparations, and then only because he, Barasov, had balked at further appeasement. Hardin seemed to follow his ambassador's thoughts. "I would much rather never to have told you anything about this."
"Well, what makes you say that?" said Barasov in surprise.
"Because there are 6 people now. You and I, the other 3 ambassadors, and Johann Lee, who have a fair notion of what's ahead. And I'm damned afraid that it was Seldon's idea to have no one know."
Why so?
Because even Selden's advanced psychology was limited. It could not handle too many independent variables. He couldn't work with individuals over any length of time, any more than you could apply the kinetic theory of gases to single molecules. He worked with mobs, populations of whole planets, and only blind mobs who do not possess foreknowledge of the results of their own actions.
That's not plain.
I can't help it. I'm not psychologist enough to explain it scientifically, but this you know. There are no trained psychologists on Terminus, and no mathematical texts on the science. It is plain that he wanted no one on Terminus capable of working out the future in advance. Selden wanted us to proceed blindly, and therefore correctly, according to the law of mob psychology. As I once told you, I never knew where we were heading when I first drove out the Anacreonians. My idea had been to maintain balance of power, no more than that. It was only afterward that I thought I saw a pattern in events. But I've done my level best not to act on that knowledge. Interference due to foresight would have knocked the plan out of kilter. Beresov nodded thoughtfully. I've heard arguments almost as complicated in the temples back on Anacreon. How do you expect to spot the right mode of action?
It's spotted already.
You admit that once we repair the battlecruiser, nothing will stop Venus from attacking us. There will no longer be any alternative in that respect.
Yes?
All right. That accounts for the external aspect. Meanwhile, you'll further admit that the next election will see a new and hostile council that will force action against Anacreon. There is no alternative there.
Yes.
And as soon as all the alternatives disappear, the crisis has come.
Just the same, I get worried.
He paused, and Beresov waited. Slowly, almost reluctantly, Hardin continued, I've got the idea, just a notion, that the external and internal pressures were planned to come to a head simultaneously. As it is, there's a few months' difference. Venus will probably attack before spring, and elections are still a year off.
That doesn't sound important.
I don't know. It may be due merely to unavoidable errors of calculation, or it might be due to the fact that I knew too much. I tried never to let my foresight influence my action, but how can I tell? And what effect will the discrepancy have? Anyway, he looked up, there's one thing I've decided.
And what's that?
When the crisis does begin to break, I'm going to Anacreon. I want to be on the spot.
Oh, that's enough, Beresov. It's getting late. Let's go out and make a night of it. I want some relaxation.
Then get it right here, said Beresov. I don't want to be recognized. Or you know what this new party your precious councilmen are forming would say. Call for the brandy.
And Hardin did. But not for too much.
3. In the ancient days when the Galactic Empire had embraced the galaxy and Anacreon had been the richest of the prefects of the periphery, more than one emperor had visited the viceregal palace in state. And not one had left without at least one effort to pit his skill with airspeedster and needlegun against the feathered flying fortress they call the Nyack Bird. The fame of Anacreon had withered to nothing with the decay of the times. The viceregal palace was a drafty mass of ruins, except for the wing that foundation workmen had restored, and no emperor had been seen in Anacreon for 200 years. But Nyack hunting was still the royal sport, and a good eye with the needle gun still the first requirement of Anacreon's kings. Leopold I, king of Anacreon, and, as was invariably but untruthfully added, lord of the outer dominions, though not yet 16, had already proved his skill many times over. He had brought down his first Nyack when scarcely 13, had brought down his 10th the week after his accession to the throne, and was returning now from his 46th. 50 before I come of age, he had exulted. Who'll take the wager? But courtiers don't take wagers against the king's skill. There is the deadly danger of winning. So no one did, and the king left to change his clothes in high spirits.
Leopold.
The king stopped mid-step at the one voice that could cause him to do so. He turned sulkily. Venus stood upon the threshold of his chambers and beetled at his young nephew.
Send them away, he motioned impatiently. Get rid of them.
The king nodded curtly, and the two chamberlains bowed and backed down the stairs. Leopold entered his uncle's room. Venus stared at the king's hunting suit morosely.
You'll have more important things to tend to than Nyack hunting soon enough.
He turned his back and stumped to his desk.
Since he had grown too old for the rush of air, the perilous dive within wingbeat of the Nyack, the roll and climb of the speedster at the motion of a foot, he had soured upon the whole sport. Leopold appreciated his uncle's sour grapes attitude, and it was not without malice that he began enthusiastically, "But you should have been with us today, Uncle. We flushed one in the wilds of Samia that was a monster, and game as they come. We had it out for 2 hours over at least 70 square miles of ground, and when I got to sunwards," he was motioning graphically as though he were once more in his speedster, "and dived torquewise. Caught him on the rise, just under the left wing at quarters. It maddened him, and he cantered athwart. I took his dare and veered aleft, waiting for the plummet. Sure enough, down he came. He was within wingbeat before I moved, and then..."
"Leopold."
"Well, I got him."
"I'm sure you did. Now will you attend?"
The king shrugged and gravitated to the end table, where he nibbled at a lira nut in quite an unregal sulk. He did not dare to meet his uncle's eyes. Weenus said, by way of preamble,
"I've been to the ship today."
"What ship?"
"There is only one ship. The ship. The one the Foundation is repairing for the Navy. The old Imperial cruiser. Do I make myself sufficiently plain?"
"That one? You see, I told you the Foundation would repair it if we asked them to. It's all poppycock, you know, that story of yours about their wanting to attack us. Because if they did, why would they fix the ship? It doesn't make sense, you know."
"Leopold, you're a fool."
The king, who had just discarded the shell of the lira nut and was lifting another to his lips, flushed. "Well, now, look here," he said with anger that scarcely rose above peevishness. "I don't think you ought to call me that. You forget yourself. I'll be of age in 2 months, you know."
"Yes, and you're in a fine position to assume regal responsibilities. If you spent half the time on public affairs that you do on Nyack hunting, I'd resign the regency directly with a clear conscience."
"I don't care. That has nothing to do with the case, you know. The fact is that even if you are the regent and my uncle, I'm still king and you're still my subject. You oughtn't to call me a fool, and you oughtn't to sit in my presence anyway. You haven't asked my permission. I think you ought to be careful, or I might do something about it pretty soon."
Weenus' gaze was cold. "May I refer to you as Your Majesty?"
"Yes."
"Very well. You are a fool, Your Majesty."
His dark eyes blazed from beneath his grizzled brows, and the young king sat down slowly. For a moment, there was sardonic satisfaction in the regent's face, but it faded quickly. His thick lips parted in a smile, and one hand fell upon the king's shoulder.
"Never mind, Leopold. I should not have spoken harshly to you. It is difficult sometimes to behave with true propriety when the pressure of events is such as... you understand?"
But if the words were conciliatory, there was something in his eyes that had not softened. Leopold said uncertainly, "Yes, affairs of state are deuced difficult, you know." He wondered, not without apprehension, whether he were not in for a dull siege of meaningless details on the year's trade with Smyrna, and the long wrangling dispute over the sparsely settled worlds on the Red Corridor. Weenus was speaking again.
"My boy, I had thought to speak of this to you earlier, and perhaps I should have, but I know that your youthful spirits are impatient of the dried tale of statecraft."
Leopold nodded. "Well, that's all right." His uncle broke in firmly and continued,
"However, you will come of age in 2 months. Moreover, in the difficult times that are coming, you will have to take a full and active part. You will be king henceforward, Leopold."
Again, Leopold nodded, but his expression was quite blank.
"There will be war, Leopold."
"War? But there's been truce with Smyrna."
"Not Smyrna, the Foundation itself."
"But, Uncle, they've agreed to repair the ship. You said..." His voice choked off at the twist of his uncle's lip.
"Leopold." Some of the friendliness had gone. "We are to talk man to man. There is to be war with the Foundation, whether the ship is repaired or not. All the sooner, in fact, since it is being repaired. The Foundation is the source of power and might. All the greatness of Anacreon, all its ships and its cities and its people and its commerce depend on the dribbles and leavings of power that the Foundation have given us grudgingly. I remember the time, I myself, when the cities of Anacreon were warmed by the burning of coal and oil. But never mind that. You would have no conception of it."
"It seems," suggested the king timidly, "that we ought to be grateful..."
"Grateful?" roared Weenus. "Grateful that they begrudge us the merest dregs, while keeping space knows what for themselves, and keeping it with what purpose in mind? Why, only that they may some day rule the galaxy."
His hand came down on his nephew's knee, and his eyes narrowed. "Leopold, you are king of Anacreon. Your children and your children's children may be kings of the universe, if you have the power that the Foundation is keeping from us." There's something in that.
Leopold's eyes gained a sparkle and his back straightened. After all, what right have they to keep it to themselves? Not fair, you know. Anacreon counts for something, too.
You see, you're beginning to understand. And now, my boy, what if Smirnoff decides to attack the Foundation for its own part and thus gains all that power? How long do you suppose we could escape becoming a vassal power? How long would you hold your throne?
Leopold grew excited. Space, yes, you're absolutely right, you know. We must strike first. It's simply self-defense.
Weena's smile broadened slightly. Furthermore, once, at the very beginning of the reign of your grandfather, Anacreon actually established a military base on the Foundation's planet, Terminus, a base vitally needed for national defense. We were forced to abandon that base as a result of the machinations of the leader of that Foundation, a sly cur, a scholar, with not a drop of noble blood in his veins. You understand, Leopold? Your grandfather was humiliated by this commoner. I remember him. He was scarcely older than myself when he came to Anacreon with his devil's smile and devil's brain, and the power of the other three kingdoms behind him, combined in cowardly union against the greatness of Anacreon.
Leopold flushed, and the sparkle in his eyes blazed. By Selden, if I had been my grandfather, I would have fought even so.
No, Leopold, we decided to wait, to wipe out the insult at a fitter time. It had been your father's hope, before his untimely death, that he might be the one to... Well, well.
Weenus turned away for a moment. Then, as if stifling emotion,
he was my brother. And yet, if his son were...
Yes, uncle. I'll not fail him. I have decided. It seems only proper that Anacreon wipe out this nest of troublemakers, and that immediately.
No, not immediately. First, we must wait for the repairs of the battlecruiser to be completed. The mere fact that they are willing to undertake these repairs proves that they fear us. The fools attempt to placate us, but we are not to be turned from our path, are we?
Then Leopold's fist slammed against his cupped palm.
Not while I am king in Anacreon.
Weena's lip twitched sardonically.
Besides which, we must wait for Salver Hardin to arrive.
Salver Hardin?
The king grew suddenly round-eyed, and the youthful contour of his beardless face lost the almost hard lines into which they had been compressed.
Yes, Leopold. The leader of the Foundation himself is coming to Anacreon on your birthday, probably to soothe us with buttered words, but it won't help him.
Salver Hardin.
It was the merest murmur.
Weenus frowned. Are you afraid of the name? It is the same Salver Hardin who on his previous visit ground our noses into the dust. You're not forgetting that deadly insult to the royal house, and from a commoner, the dregs of the gutter.
No, I guess not. No, I won't. I won't. We'll pay him back. But I'm afraid, a little.
The regent rose.
Afraid? Of what? Of what, you young...
He choked off.
It would be a sort of blasphemous, you know, to attack the Foundation. I mean...
He paused.
Go on.
Leopold said confusedly.
I mean, if there were really a galactic spirit, it mightn't like it. Don't you think?
No, I don't, was the hard answer.
Weenus sat down again, and his lips twisted in a queer smile.
And so you really bother your head a great deal over the galactic spirit, do you? That's what comes of letting you run wild. You've been listening to Verisov quite a bit, I take it.
He's explained a great deal.
About the galactic spirit?
Yes.
Why, you unweaned cub, he believes in that mummery a good deal less than I do, and I don't believe in it at all. How many times have you been told that all this talk is nonsense?
Well, I know that, but Verisov says...
Damnation to Verisov. It's nonsense.
There was a short, rebellious silence, and then Leopold said,
Everyone believes it just the same. I mean, all this talk about the prophet Harry Selden and how he appointed the Foundation to carry on his commandments that there might someday be a return of the earthly paradise, and how anyone who disobeys his commandments will be destroyed for eternity. They believe it. I presided at festivals, and I'm sure they do.
Yes, they do, but we don't. And you may be thankful it's so, for according to this foolishness, you are king by divine right, and are semi-divine yourself. Very handy. It eliminates all possibilities of revolts, and ensures absolute obedience in everything. And that is why, Leopold, you must take an active part in ordering the war against the Foundation. I am only regent, and quite human. You are king, and more than half a god to them.
But I suppose I'm not, really,
said the king reflectively.
No, not really, came the ironic response. But you are to everyone but the people of the Foundation. Get that? To everyone but those of the Foundation. Once they are removed, there will be no one to deny you the Godhead. Think of that.
And after that, we will ourselves be able to operate the power boxes of the temple and the ships that fly without men and the holy food that cures cancer and all the rest. Barisov said only those blessed with the galactic spirit could...
Yes, Barisov said. Barisov, next to Salver Hardin, is your greatest enemy. Stay with me, Leopold. Don't worry about them. Together we will recreate an empire, not just the kingdom of Anacreon, but one comprising every one of the billions of suns of the galaxy. Isn't that better than a wordy earthly paradise?
Yes.
Can Barisov promise more?
No.
Very well. His voice became peremptory. I suppose we may consider the matter settled. He waited for no answer. Get along. I'll be down later. And just one thing, Leopold. The young king turned on the threshold. Venus was smiling with all but his eyes. Be careful on these Nyack hunts, my boy. Since the unfortunate accident to your father, I have had the strangest presentiments concerning you at times. In the confusion, with needle guns thickening the air with darts, one can never tell. You will be careful, I hope. And you'll do as I say about the Foundation, won't you? Leopold's eyes widened and dropped away from those of his uncle.
Yes, certainly.
Good. He stared after his departing nephew, expressionlessly, and returned to his desk. And Leopold's thoughts, as he left, were somber and not unfearful. Perhaps it would be best to defeat the Foundation and gain the power Weena spoke of. But afterward, when the war was over and he was secure in his throne, he became acutely conscious of the fact that Weenus and his two arrogant sons were at present next in line to the throne. But he was king, and kings could order people shot, even uncles and cousins. 4. Next to Cermak himself, Louis Bort was most active in rallying those dissident elements which had fused into the now vociferous Action Party. Yet he had not been one of the deputation that had called on Salver Hardin almost half a year previously. That this was so was not due to any lack of recognition of his efforts, quite the contrary. He was absent for the very good reason that he was on Anacreon's capital world at the time. He visited it as a private citizen. He saw no official, and he did nothing of importance. He merely watched the obscure corners of the busy planet and poked his stubby nose into dusty crannies. He arrived home toward the end of a short winter day that had started with clouds and was finishing with snow, and within an hour was seated at the octagonal table in Cermak's home. His first words were not calculated to improve the atmosphere of a gathering already considerably depressed by the deepening snow-filled twilight outside. "I'm afraid," he said, "that our position is what is usually termed in melodramatic phraseology a lost cause." "You think so?" said Cermak gloomily. "It's gone past thought, Cermak. There's no room for any other opinion."
"Armaments," began Docor Walto somewhat officiously, but Bork broke in at once.
"Forget that. It's an old story." This book is continued on cassette number 4, side 1.